Hale Varsity Magazine presents the Hale Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hale Varsity.
Day by day,
day by day,
we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We
get
beat, beat.
We get beat, beat.
Boom, beat, beat.
Boom, beat, beat.
Hale Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Great to have you on a Tuesday. Hale Varsity Radio, Hale Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, and you, maybe a Blackshirt Husker NFLer, Jay Moore, signing tomorrow. Busy one today. We'll get caught up with ESPN.com and magazine's Mitch Sherman. Love Mitch. Great dude. Tremendous talent. Happy to still say that he is ESPN.com and magazine's Mitch Sherman. That is awesome. Rick Pizzo in 1 hour. Big Ten Buffet. Pizzo got to go red carpet with the Big Ten Network and the NFL Draft. He'll let us know about it. Good for him. And then Husker, now Kansas City Chief Alonzo Moore. He'll join us at about 5:25. Can join us today, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Can tap the line. Schillingbridge Cork and Tap House allows you to do that. Also on Twitter, can follow us at Schmidt underscore radio, at TJ underscore Henning, or at Hale Varsity. So that's the lineup today. Mitch Sherman, Rick Pizzo, and Alonzo Moore. Deej, you're already planning dinner. I can't hear you, bro.
Yes, that I am. Turn on the mic.
You looked really happy and say, yeah, I can get sub sandwiches and burritos for ultra cheap tonight.
Yep, that is the plan.
Okay.
Jimmy John's and Chipotle.
Then we did a little wallet biopsy. Because you said if you have a teacher's pass,
mm-hmm.
I don't know where my...
Teacher ID.
ID. Well, yeah. I don't know where my teacher ID went from 100 years ago. They're not good looking. But looking at the old college ID from graduate school, 7 years ago, I was a sexy beast. Now I'm just...
Oh, boy.
Now I'm just old and someday soon we'll be tan again. But yeah, the wallet biopsy. I don't quite have the Costanza wallet going.
No.
But I used to.
Really? It used to be that thick?
It was bad. Do you do Velcro?
As a kid.
We all did.
Growing up,
I had a Dolphins Velcro.
Yeah, I had a Velcro to like freshman, sophomore year in college.
Mm. Okay. Well, in a way, that's an impressive jump, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The day you go
From Velcro
to leather,
mm-hmm.
and then some of you just go all out and do the chain wallet thing, and that means you're tough, and I'm not, and I mean that.
Yeah.
You'll strangle me with the chain or show me your tattoo that you did and got without
anesthesia. How many piercings you have.
Right.
Yep.
I'm just kidding. If you're a wallet dude with the chain and you have a motorcycle, God love you.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, when you make it into that preseason top 25, it is a sign of maturity. And when you do that, it's supposed to stay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Listen, it is that time of year, so lists are going to come out, projections are going to come out. And right now, according to Stuart Mandel, Fox, Nebraska's traded in their Velcro wallet for their leather wallet.
Mm-hmm.
Nebraska made the post-spring top 25. Stop and say that for a second. Usually it was no big deal. It's not that they made it. It's, well, you got hosed because you're only number four or five preseason.
Mm-hmm.
Remember those years? And it was always death, taxes, Nebraska's number 15. Starting out right smack in the middle because that's where they ended the year at 9-3. Some good wins, some blowout wins, a couple of tough losses,
yep,
and then the bowl game. Well, now... And Stewart's done college football for 1,000 years, Sports Illustrated and now Fox. And let's go through the list here. But ask yourself this, as you have 120-some days till kickoff resumes, but who's counting? Does Nebraska belong in the preseason top 25? based on what you saw this spring. And there's some unanswered questions, a lot. But you can also hedge this a bit and say, I saw enough to say, yeah, they're amongst the top 25 teams. For sure, in the Big Ten, top four, top five. Schedule's not easy, but favorable. You get Iowa and Wisconsin at home. You got to go to Minnesota. And that walking advertisement. And then you end it second to last at Penn State. So it's not easy. But it's kind of doable because you're supposed to win your home games. All right, preseason top 25, post-spring top 25, however you want to define it. Alabama's number one. Are you down with that?
Yeah.
Veteran O-line. Defense is back. It really doesn't matter who they have at quarterback as long as he can throw. Jalen Hurts may or may not get better. Ohio State, are you buying? You know what I get the feeling? I think Burrow could win that job. Pump the brakes, hit the gas, and then really lose your lunch when I say that. But Barrett's incumbent, Urban Meyer's shown that he is not afraid to get rid of the starter. Huh? Braxton? Go catch the ball. We're going with Cardale. Mm-hmm. We're going with Barrett. And let's be straight, man. Barrett was kind of a nightmare in big games throwing the football. Joe Burrow, you saw, who wanted to be at Nebraska, by the way, is more of your – he can run, but he's more of your thrower. If Barrett struggles, you go to the bullpen. Something to think about.
Yeah.
It's a nice problem to have if you're Ohio State.
Well, and talking with a guy who worked there for a week – and then moved on to a different grad position. Urban Meyer doesn't give 2 cents about where you fall on the roster. If you're the right guy, you're going to be the one starting.
Sure. Well, and how much spring impressions were made by Burrow, and then if you get a crack, if the guy's struggling. USC.
Oh, yeah.
They're
big on Sam Darnold.
Loaded. Darnold's a guy, too, that has kind of had to grind at it. Wasn't ever given to him. Yeah, he was good enough to get a scholarship to SC, but he was completely the afterthought. Penn State, they have completely flushed. They come in at number four. They have flushed this championship run last year. It's awesome. It's nice. Now they're supposed to forget about it. Build on it, but don't dwell on it. Because they got hot. They were good, too. But they got really hot and made a run. So they have all the makings to be really good because of two top offensive players. Clemson comes in at number five. I'll tell you where Nebraska's at in a minute. Bear with me. I don't know. I think Florida State's your ACC champ. I think Miami makes a major jump. And I think Clemson, I mean, they have a lot of defense back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want me to be specific? Wilkins and Lawrence and Farrell and Joseph and Van Smith.
Yeah, you know they're going to have monsters on that D line.
Yeah, they were really young and good
Watson.
On that D line. Yeah, I think Deshaun really made it happen.
And you also like Francois from Florida State.
Yeah,
so.
You lose Mike Williams.
Mm-hmm.
You beat Florida State at home this year in a really good ball game. You got to go to Tallahassee. Sorry, I don't see them staying in the top 10. Washington. Yeah. They've lost a lot of picks the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're top 10 good. I think Florida State's absolutely top 10 good. They come in at 7, OU at 8. As long as people don't run from cops drunkenly again, I think OU's okay. Baker Mayfield's 22-4 as a starter. You don't have Mixon. You don't have P. Ryan. You don't have Westbrook. But, oh, well, OU's continued to reload. They got Auburn at number 9. Vogues saw War
yeah,
Eagles spring game, and he thinks they're for real. They're good defensively, and they have a quarterback that's not a tire fire. Okie State, sure. Stanford, number 11, yeah, they're pretty good. Georgia, Nick Chubb is now 75 years old and still running the ball for them dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I think Georgia could be really good. Wisconsin, number 13, how does that grab you? In Stuart Mandel's post-spring top 25.
A little high for me, but... boy, I could see them right there, too.
Listen, I just, you know what? Did we not write off Wisconsin a year ago?
Oh, totally.
At this time, their schedule's death. They're going to be a joke. They'll be like a wounded animal.
Is their quarterback going to be able to make passes down the field?
And it didn't matter.
No.
Their quarterbacks were average last year, but still good enough because their defense and running game and O-line was sweet. They completely had a guy that was just supposed to not screw it up at quarterback last year. And it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And they even went kind of rotating dual quarterbacking from time to time. Man, until they start going south, until they start going the other way, I think you just kind of got to accept Wisconsin as a 9, 10, 11 win team every year. And I know that's what they've been, but I don't see a drop.
No, they should win the Big Ten West. I just don't know if the winner of the Big Ten West would be 13th. Maybe they'd be like 17th or 18th, but again,
I don't quite have their schedule memorized. But I mean, you have Sitchie and Sheehy. They just find dudes at linebacker that mess you up.
Yeah.
And their O-line's going to be good. Kansas State, number 14. Post-spring, top 25. Okay, you got to figure that West Virginia and Oklahoma State are going to be very viable. Baylor probably still has some talent, but you don't know. And you figure that, is this the last hurrah for Grandpa Snyder?
Yeah, you wonder if it is.
If that's the case with the cancer, with the treatment, do they send him out the right way? Not only is he a sentimental college football national talking point, where they do it for Grandpa.
Yeah, but we'll have to ask Mitch coming up next because he's gone down there once or twice already.
Yeah, we'll talk to Mitch about that. We'll talk to Mitch about Saban's payday. We got a returning quarterback. I think they got to go to Oklahoma this year, but they have been uncannily good at winning in Norman, close ball games in years that they're up. And that's kind of the slow build for Kansas State. Every fourth or fifth year, it seems like, because they were good in 11. Give them about 3-4 years to rejuvenate. All right, let's get to Nebraska. Does Nebraska belong as a top 25 preseason team? They come in with Stuart Mandel's post-spring top 25 in at number 23. Listen, do they belong or not? Probably not. Will you take it? There's some sign of, all right, Nebraska could be all right. It could be fine. I think you take it. And then you just... You'll know your answer after Oregon. Heading into the Big Ten. Do you feel better about quarterback? Yes. Were they a top 25 team last year? Yes. Were they a top 7 team last year going into the Wisconsin game? Yeah. Were they still top 10 going into Ohio State? Yes. Do you know what's going on at outside linebacker? You feel good at one side of the outside linebacking group? With Newby and Gifford, do you know, with Alex Davis and everybody else? No. Do you feel good about your interior? I feel really good about the defense. Overreaction, hot take here. But I think they'll come together and be fine because I like the Davis kids. I think the secondary will be fine. I feel fine about the defense. I think the quarterback's going to do enough to not screw it up and be pretty good. I think the guys want to play for him. And I think Pearsonell and Stanley will be all right. They'll committee it to be better at the run game because the pass threat is real. And you'll just survive with this offensive line. Come to Jesus will happen, and the left side of the offensive line will be okay. So, yes, give me them in the top 25 ahead of NC State. Sure. Ahead of Mississippi State. Sure. But they also eke out Notre Dame, Texas, Tennessee, Virginia Tech. They just missed. And Tennessee's replacing a quarterback. Texas has been a mess. Virginia Tech's replacing quarterback. Utah lost a lot. Notre Dame, no more Kaiser. So really, these teams that are in the top 25 and have come in, they have a returning quarterback, or you feel good about the returning starters. And while Zach Lee is not a returning starter, he's something you've not had to play with forever at Nebraska, and certainly not with a West Coast offense.
So does Nebraska need to be under the radar necessarily? No, but I don't think they're deserving of the top 25 right now. You know, last offseason they were kind of the media darling, especially on ESPN with the college football playoff dark horse.
Yes, you said the Katy Perry words.
Yes, the Katy Perry words. I think they should be unranked right now. Necessarily, I don't know if they need it, but they're not deserving of it to me right now. Just too many questions on the offensive line and with the new defense and especially the defensive line.
So that said, and your points are valid, based on who's in this ranking, why not? You can throw them in there and not look foolish, despite some of the question marks. I think the potential is enough to put them in, but I agree with your point about maybe it's better to be under the radar. And by no means did anyone buy in and get too big ahead last year.
Yeah.
I don't think that was an instance at all.
No, but it was surprising how many times Nebraska came up last year, though.
Oh, it was absolutely a sexy pick. Why not be that guy who was right and out on the old tree limb and knock it out by picking Nebraska early? Washington, one of those teams, too. Because Washington, I think, in Peterson's first year or even second year was 7-6 or 8-6 or something like that. Well, Peterson's year three was a year ago, I believe, and they totally delivered. They could be good. But Nebraska, do they deserve to be a top 25 team in the preseason? Top 25. Stuart Mandel says yes. Mitch Sherman of ESPN next on Hail Varsity.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
Thanks for your time. Great to be back. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning. 1 hour from now, Husker wideout. Now Chiefs wideout, Alonzo Moore. Rick Pizzo coming up. And with ESPN.com and magazine, Mitch Sherman joins us. Had Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, thanks for a few minutes. How you doing?
I'm well. Good to see the sun. And I'm going to be coaching some baseball tonight. So, yeah, it's good night.
I like
good
that.
Evening. Good afternoon.
It is wonderful. And sunshine and no rain's impressive. And Mitch, I wanted to start out by just kind of getting your thoughts on last week and how it was for you. You've covered college football for a number of years. And you've done an amazing job at ESPN, and you're with ESPN, but so many folks you know and have worked with are not. I know it's a tough question and a tough topic, but I wanted to kind of get your reaction on how the last 7 days have been for you.
Yeah, it's always uncomfortable when the media becomes part of the story, you know, whether that's really no matter what that is. I think uncomfortable for the people who are used to doing my jobs. And then when it's for this kind of a reason, because so many trusted coworkers in this instance lost their jobs last week. I mean, it becomes so much more painful. I mean, one of the most difficult weeks that I've had professionally, and not just me, but I think a lot of the people that all around ESPN, and I think it extends through the sports media and the media business in general. It's just tough to see good people lose their jobs, and I mean that applies to all lines of work. Mm-hmm. But this hit extremely close to home. Continues to hit extremely close to home for me and for so many people that I worked with for a long time. And some of these relationships go back considerably longer than the 7 years, six going on 7 years that I've been at ESPN. But, you know, one thing to come out of it is I think that a lot of people, I've heard a lot of reaction, you know, most of it, people upset that these coworkers of ours lost their jobs. And, you know, these were generally reporters who were out there. They weren't necessarily media superstars. They were people who provide information for the fans and the public. And the fact that there was the response that did come from the public, it helps give me hope that people still want to hear good stories and people value the work that reporters do. So moving forward at ESPN, that'll be something that helps inspire me to continue to tell those stories. So, you know, we'll we'll obviously get through it, and that's easier for me to say, mm-hmm. I suppose, in my position. But you know, we're going to continue to support those people who aren't with us anymore in a working capacity, and try to tell good stories about college sports.
Mitch, what's from a role standpoint? What's next for you?
Just continue to do my job. Continue to write stories and tell the stories of people in college sports. I think that we've got a smaller staff, and I know we've got a smaller staff, and I think that'll mean more diversity, more responsibilities in different ways throughout coverage of college sports. I don't anticipate that we'll be adding sports or you know, things that are way outside the realm of what I'm experienced doing I won't be adding that to my job description, but I could certainly see more basketball in the future just based on who was left to cover college sports at the company. So you know, eventually, moving forward, I'll be excited, and I think a lot of the people that I work with will be excited about the opportunities that we have. You know, the circumstances that these opportunities came about aren't the best, but you know, eventually, the people who aren't here at the company anymore are going to be moving on and you know, seeking other avenues of work We'll do our best to fill their shoes and tell as many good stories as we can and inform the sports fans and the sports public as much as we can about their favorite teams and athletes and coaches.
Well, glad to still have you at ESPN, Mitch. Going to switch to some football here. The Big 12 had the fewest amount of guys drafted out of the Power 5 conference. Have you noticed a depth of talent has become less in the Big 12 over the last couple of years, or do you think that was just maybe an odd year for the Big 12?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is a trend that extends throughout the Big 12 in multiple ways. I mean, you can look at the success that the league has had on the field, an absence from all three of the college football playoff championship games, an absence overall from two of the three college football playoffs. You just look at last year and the way the Big 12 was somewhat outside of the picture from a fairly early standpoint as far as contending for those top four spots that are so important now to college football. And you see it in recruiting. You've seen the Big 12 trend down a little bit or in some cases a lot on signing day. So the draft is a natural place for the league to falter in another way. And there is, I would say, a lot of younger talent in the league at places like Texas. Texas really jumps out as having a lot of young talent, but now they've got a coaching transition and you know, potentially a speed bump for the development in some of those players. Others will get a boost from the transition here to Tom Herman, but it's a question mark nonetheless about the progress of those players. So. You know, we'll see. Does this turn out to be a thing? Some of the changes around the league, does it turn out to be a thing where ultimately it can bring the Big 12 back to being more prominent in the NFL draft, or will it be another setback? And, you know, that's a question that'll be answered over the next year or two, especially at a place like Texas. But there's no question that the Big 12 has suffered since the conference expansion era got rolling, and as you look around the country, it's not even close in terms of talent this year that went to the NFL as far as what the fifth league or the fifth Power Five league was. There's a better argument to be made that a group of five league, you know, a mid-major league or two, is closing in or surpass the talent across the Big 12.
So the talent question, though, hasn't hurt them in preseason rankings. Stuart Mandel of Fox Sports released his top 25. He had four Big 12 teams in his top 15, and one of them was Kansas State. And I know you've been down to Manhattan recently a couple times. Do you think they have a real shot to win the Big 12 this year, maybe one of Snyder's final seasons?
I think Kansas State has a real shot to contend for that position behind Oklahoma State and Oklahoma. And, you know, it wasn't on accident that I said Oklahoma State first. I think that some of the changes that have happened at Oklahoma State, the addition of a couple of grad transfers, you know, we'll see how it plays out in the summer. But, right now I look at the Cowboys as the favorite in the league, and I put Oklahoma next. And I know Mike Gundy has not had success or much success against Bob Stoops, and you got to beat the big boy in the room to win the conference title. I understand that, but Kansas State to me is a team that's probably best positioned among the remaining eight to make a move toward the top if those two Oklahoma teams falter. So I don't look at the Wildcats as a conference championship favorite. I suppose you could use the word contender, but they're definitely in that second, at the top, I would say, of that second tier of teams.
Mitch, what are your thoughts with Nebraska back to the draft with just Nathan Gary being the only Husker drafted?
Yeah, we talked about the Big 12 and the talent drain out of that league, and I don't have any overwhelmingly strong takes on it. I think it's there in front of you. You see that Nebraska has had turnover in the coaching ranks in recent years, and I think that has caught up with this program. It caught up with the program before the NFL draft last week, but that was another symptom of some of the struggles that Nebraska had in recruiting under Bo Pelini. Much like Jim Harbaugh in his third year at Michigan doesn't necessarily deserve the credit for 11 Wolverines going in the draft because they were all recruited by Brady Hoke. You certainly can't put this on Mike Riley and his staff when evaluating what happened at Nebraska that led to only one player being drafted last week. It's a combination of a lot of factors, and I would say just as significant as how those players developed under the last 2 years under Riley or how they developed at Michigan under Harbaugh in a positive way, you have to take into consideration the players who were recruited and the type of players who were recruited in the old regime.
Mitch, when it comes to development, is that's something we nailed yesterday? We talked about development. We talked about, credit, or is there a void in talent? And I'm kind of not straddling the fence. I think it varies year to year because you can't blast the previous regime because you had four guys drafted year one of Riley. Mm-hmm. That said, you can't crush Riley for only having one guy this year because it's still part of that greater transition that affects programs. And what's the word you have on Riley as a developer? Because my viewpoint says that the guy developed quite a few guys at Oregon State when he was there to the next level, to the league. And what do you think Nebraska should be putting into the NFL each year? You got about 60 seconds.
That was his strength, no doubt. Mm-hmm. About his makeup at Oregon State. It was unquestionably what they did well. Excuse me, in going and taking players and making them better. So I don't have any reason to believe that he has all of a sudden ceased. He and his staff have all of a sudden ceased to be able to excel in that area. Mm-hmm. The jury's still out on how it's going to happen in Nebraska with player development. In 2 years, you don't have enough of a sample size to say, because Nebraska just had one player drafted, that, okay, Mike Riley's going to struggle to develop talent in Nebraska. We'll find out over the coming years. So it's very much a story that is in progress and will play out over time. This year, I would expect, is going to be an anomaly. Nebraska's not going to regularly place just one player in the draft. The expectation for me is, of course, multiple players and trending toward that four or five range year in, year out.
There's Mitch Sherman with ESPN, ESPN Magazine, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, we'll talk to you next week, my man. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Yep, good to catch up. Thanks,
awesome
Chris.
Stuff. Yep, Mitch Sherman with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Coming up, Alonzo Moore, less than an hour away.
Former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, pull back up, Jay. Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Good stuff from Mitch Sherman. of ESPN.com and Magazine. 25 minutes away, it's Big Ten Buffet time. Rick Pizzo, who was at the NFL Draft, and Alonzo Moore, head of the Kansas City. TJ Henning, Chris Schmidt. Let's tell you about Sauter Heyman, your friend Rick and the gang at Sauter Heyman. Pure-grown diamonds, Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds. What are pure-grown diamonds? Well, they're real diamonds, but they're grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth, which means you save 10 to 40% off. They're eco-friendly. They're beautiful. And they're some of the biggest and best sellers in Sauter Heyman history. When I tell you about pure-grown diamonds, they will wow you, and you know they'll wow her. So, when you have time, go see Rick and the gang at Sauter Heyman today, 12th and O downtown, South Point Pavilion, or out west in Grand Island. And log on today, SauterHeyman.com, Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds, Sauter Heyman. So, flipping through the channels last night, before Better Call Saul, great episode last night. Let me tell you about it. Kidding. I won't do that to you.
Yeah.
But it was a flat-out sweet episode. So, once I saw James Harden and the gang were up 30, like, I don't need to see this. And I'm also struggling with non-HD on most of my channels that yet I'm paying for.
Ooh.
That is brutal.
Yeah. It is funny when you go back to standard and you're like, man, we used to watch this.
I screamed out loud and the dog looked at me. If it's on ABC, I'm good. If it's on CBS or NBC, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just Gus Fring doesn't look the same to me. It makes me weep.
Yeah.
So anywho, I was not having any of live sports action in non-HD.
That was a beat down.
Damn
by
apartment.
The Rockets.
That was brutal.
Beat down.
Should we hear from Pop? Pop, his first question in the post game last night was just, you know, what the hell happened here?
Well, I think that, you know, we've got to get some scoring out of our big guys because excuse me.
Yeah, got some on
you. You know, obviously one might think that we have an advantage in that area, and that didn't work out for us at all, so that's got to be something that we get more out of for sure.
So that's an adjustment, okay? That's an adjustment that they need for future use, game two. Next cut from Pop. Here we go.
We lost, and they won, and they played better.
So do you that, like
that's okay? I got the cut screwed up. That's what the hell happened.
We lost, and they won, and they played better.
In depth,
how it gets better from here. You heard the first clip. What's cut number two? I didn't write these down for the first time in forever.
We got execution here.
Yeah,
we competed, but I don't think we executed in a very wise manner.
You think
so? We disobeyed a lot of basic basketball rules that they can take advantage of. If we're going to shoot quickly and shoot poorly, it's going to be a fast break deal all night long, and they're better at that than we are. So we've got to play a lot smarter than what we saw tonight. I thought they played really well in every facet of the game.
They kicked our butt. We were stupid. Credit them. They're better at fast breaking because they're not all 38 years of age.
Or they don't play as slow as the slowest team like the Memphis Grizzlies, who you just played last season.
That would screw you with you a little bit.
You go from playing the slowest team to the fastest. That's definitely going to mess with you. But look, this is Mike D'Antoni's revenge series. All those years in Phoenix, losing to the San Antonio Spurs, especially when they're up, I think, 2-1 that year, and Boris Diaw and Amari Stoudemire leave the bench and
get
suspended.
How about a Boris sighting in Utah?
Yeah, he's playing really well in Utah. But, man, look, the Rockets, they might not make 23s again, but they're still going to score 110 points. And I don't think San Antonio can score 100 right now. They got 99
There's
last
no
night, but they
answer.
Got Kawhi. But LaMarcus Aldridge should be put on a milk carton. Can't find him anywhere. Paul Gasol's not giving you anything. Danny Green's not giving you anything.
He was over 7
at
one point last
night. It's just
night.
Basically Kawhi right now.
No, it is, and I love San Antonio. I love how they're constructed. So, truth be told, I don't mind San Antonio. I get a kick out of Pop. I have 40 options out of the West. It seems like that'll give me good basketball in the semis, in the finals of the Western Conference. Whatever I get, I'll be cool with. I could get Golden State. I mean, I got to get Golden State. Let me rephrase that.
I want Golden State Houston.
I need Golden State. I can't do anything about Utah. That would make me ill. But either San Antonio.
Ooh, I think I'd rather watch Utah over San Antonio.
Well, I think you're going to see Golden State Houston.
Yeah, and that's okay. What I want.
That'll be a blast.
That's going to be three-point barrage.
That'll
everywhere.
Be a party. Oh. But you know what? Houston's a little more efficient at it right now.
Yeah, they are, actually.
Because they got Harden. I mean, Harden is should be your MVP.
Yeah, it was between him and Russ or me, so he could go either way. Look, D'Antoni's never known for his defense, but this is his best defensive team since he's been in the NBA.
Well, it's just been a kind of an evolution, not only for Harden, but for D'Antoni. Because, I mean, listen, ended kind of crazily where it was just, let's get about 8 games over 500 in Phoenix. And then the New York experiment, sorry, didn't work out.
No, not at all.
But now, this is home, and it's going well, and he's talked Harden into it being his idea to be a distributor and score and play unselfish and play defense. Let's talk Cleveland for a second. And they jumped out and all over Toronto. Then it got a little tight, and then it was okay. And Tyronn Lue, your favorite Husker hoopster, one of them, after last night's first game one win.
We just stayed the course. Confidence never wavered. And, you know, that's what the playoffs is about, you know, spurts and making runs. They made a couple of runs, but I was happy the way we kept our composure.
Yeah, Cleveland looked good. They look like they're having fun. They look so dialed in.
You could tell
they
they're not.
Look fresh.
They are not scared at all of the Toronto Raptors.
They're not scared, and they pace themselves, and they are no longer bored. They're not bored. They're confident. And the bigger question I have, what did you kind of peg LeBron as? Liquor, beer, or wine guy?
My momentum just took me to the sideline, and I'm not going to run over our beer lady, you know. And she had one, you know, in her hand, so I took it out of her hand. But not much of a beer guy. If she'd had some red wine, I probably would have definitely
Red wine.
For the antioxidants, right?
I think it's because Duke can afford probably the most expensive bottle.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not a red wine guy either.
I'm not a wine guy at all.
I'd like to be a red wine guy, which means I can afford it someday. I got to have Uncle Nate and other people way more high-class caliber than me tell me what to order. Because sometimes it's good with red meat.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm not surprised at all.
And, I mean, I don't complain about communion.
LeBron treats his body like a temple. I think he spends like $5 million on like keeping it that
it's a write-off.
I mean, that's why he's never missed significant
time with
an
injury. That was the best thing I've seen in a long time, where he's got a cold one in his hand.
Oh, yeah. And that just goes to show they're not scared at all.
I wasn't going
to
run over my beer lady.
And the Raptors don't think they can win either.
No, but they're going to be ordering shots. So, Rick Pizzo's coming up. We'll wind down hour one. Alonzo Moore, Husker wideout, now down in Kansas City. We talked to Zoe yesterday, and he was on a plane to Dallas, which would have made it tough for the interview, especially if the stewardess would have said, hey, we need you to turn your phone off. So we said, let's do it today. So Alonzo Moore coming up. As we thank you for tuning in, Hail Varsity Radio continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HailVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
One final time, hour one. Chris Schmidt, TJ Heading, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Rick Pizzo, 10 minutes away. We will get into Saban's new signing bonus and raise. Wow. So, what do we got tonight? We got Golden State, Utah.
Yep. But the one before that.
Boston and
Celtics,
the Wiz.
Wizards.
Are we airing that tonight, actually?
I would think so.
I would pray to God we are. So we'll see if that's the case.
The Celtics made 23s in that game. I don't see that happening like Houston. Like Houston, obviously, I don't think they'll make that many again, but Boston made 19 threes. They're not that great of three-point shooting team. The Wizards, they're not going to start off the game up 16 to nothing either. So that was just a really weird game full of runs. So, but this is going to be a fun series back and forth. I think it's going 7.
Well, if you won any NBA, TJ Henning's your man.
That's right. TJ underscore Henning. I got you there.
You did. I appreciate that. So Pizzo's coming up. He was at the NFL draft. His thoughts on Nebraska and the talent discussion. Alonzo Moore is down at home, so he'll catch up with us, which will be good. So I got to ask here. We were spending time on preseason top 25, post-spring top 25, and Nebraska comes in at number 23. And I think Nebraska will be, it'll be sexier. Sometimes you can nudge somebody in, whether or not you think they belong, to help a matchup. You have Oregon and you'll have Nebraska week two. But let's zoom out for a second and ask a question that Athlon has thrown out there, and that is Nebraska, Iowa, or Northwestern the biggest threat to Wisconsin in the West? And you got to ask yourself first, well, do you concede that Wisconsin's your favorite? I say with both hands, yes. Now, is Nebraska more likely than Iowa to challenge Wisconsin? And with the quarterback play, I say yes. With the line play, I say hell to the no.
Yeah.
Offensive line play. I think the defensive line will be okay. And then there's Northwestern. I mean, you want to talk about how an unbalanced schedule, and I know the Big Ten has 9 conference games, but you really load up every other year for feast or famine. You got Iowa, you have Wisconsin, you have Northwestern all at home this year. Played all 3 of those on the road last year. Would you be down with chopping it up? Colorado did this 1,000 years ago. There was back-to-back years where Oklahoma had to play in Lincoln. I think it was 85-86. And that was to help Colorado out, because they wanted to split it up. The years they'd play Oklahoma at home, they'd have to go to Lincoln. The years they'd have to go to Lincoln, at least they hosted OU. Big Eight was trying to get a third team viable, aside from Oklahoma State, which was good in the mid-80s. So I don't know. Do you want that split up, or do you want kind of feast or famine with the scheduling? Rick Pizzo's next.
Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day, we get better and better. We get big beat.
Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Back with you, Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. It is that time, Big Ten Buffet time. Mr. Rick Pizzo, at BTN Rick Pizzo on Twitter. Mr. Rick, you're all over the world, man. How you doing?
I am doing well, Schmitty. It has been a long weekend for sure. NFL Draft Thursday, Friday. Big Ten Men's Golf Championships Saturday, Sunday. Philly and back, Baltimore and back. But it's all good, man. They're paying me to talk sports. I can't complain.
Absolutely. Now, before we get into the NFL Draft, I know you're a baseball manager. I got to ask you, yay or nay on wearing a visor to coach third base?
I'm okay with it, man. There is too many instances that we've heard of guys getting hurt, even at the younger level. You know, we joke around about youth baseball. I've seen kids and adults get beaned on the way. It's just not worth it, man. Anything that's safer is okay by me.
That's fine. I didn't make myself clear. A visor, like, you know, a Kiffin visor.
Oh, I thought you meant like the face shield.
No, I'm talking like an offensive coordinator visor.
No, visors to me are reserved for the golf course only. I'm not a visor guy. Not on the football field, not on the baseball field. Visors are for the golf course and the golf course only.
We ran into that unique species of third base coach in our youth Youth Baseball League 2 weeks ago wearing a visor. And
yeah, not down with that.
Didn't work out. How about the NFL draft, though, man? Tell me how Philly was. What'd you think?
First of all, Chris, I got to tell you, the way those fans turned out, I mean, 70,000 strong, they were there for almost the entire night. They basically shut down Benjamin Franklin Parkway for the better part of a mile. And how about the boos that rained down on Roger Goodell? You literally could not hear anything in the crowd because it was the loudest, longest, sustained boo that I've ever heard in my life. It had to last for a solid minute at top volume.
That doesn't shock me. That's Philly fan, and yep, they are passionate. But overall, got to be pleased with the Big Ten showing 35 picks overall.
Yeah, I think so. And there were a couple of surprises, I think, in that first round that jumped out to me. I mean, the Raiders took a risk with Gerrion Conley, taking him 24th. No risk in terms of his ability, but an open sexual assault case out there. They said they did their due diligence. They felt comfortable making that pick. Jabril Peppers goes one pick later to the Browns at 25. He's kind of a man without a position. He's just a great football player, but where does he fit in Cleveland? I think those are the two biggest storylines, at least of the first round, as far as the Big Ten is concerned.
You know, Nebraska had Nathan Gary go in the fifth round, and that snapped a 50-plus year streak of multiple Nebraska guys going. What's that say to you? I mean, I look at this as there's no right answer when you look at talent, and some say that that's kind of a talent indictment on where Nebraska's at. Other years, it's you have an under 500 football team with four guys drafted, so there's no right answer. I think the NFL's so specific and so refined that you either fit or you don't. And to me, I think Nebraska's still got a great reputation for producing pro guys, even though they only had one guy picked. What's your take?
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said there. I also think that you can't look at 1 year. I think it needs to be in a four-year span because those are how classes are evaluated. You also have guys who leave early. You have guys who transfer at different schools. If you look at the Big Ten as a whole, I think most people would say this is a pretty good draft for the Big Ten, right? They were actually fourth out of the Power Five ahead of only the Big 12 in terms of number of picks. So then you'd say, well, the statistics tell me it's a down year for the Big Ten. Now, you have to remember last year Ohio State alone had 9 early entries. So it's not a matter of just 1 year. You need to look at it at a minimum 3 because that's how long guys have to stay after they arrive in college. And I think 4 years is a better span. Now, over the course of 4 years, if you're way behind the rest of your own conference, that typically means you're in trouble. I would bet that over the past 4 years, Nebraska is not behind too many teams inside the league.
No, so you're telling me that with 9 early entrants last year with Ohio State, they could have had 16 this year go?
Think about that. Is that crazy? I mean, and it's not as if they're empty with their cupboard this year either. I mean, I've seen a preseason publication right now that has Ohio State number 1. Most have them top 5 despite what they've lost over the last couple of years. It's really amazing. They never rebuild. It's all about reloading with Urban Meyer.
Well, yeah, let's stay with that reload for a second because that's where Nebraska wants to get, where they're cranking out pros, but there's depth and depth of talent. Why does Urban and his staff, why are they so good at development? Because you got basically three programs that come to mind, Rick. You have Bama, you have Ohio State, and then Oklahoma pretty much. I'm missing some likely, but you have those three that over the last 4 years, they win a lot. They win conferences. They go to the playoff. They go to major bowl games. And, oh, yeah, they put good guys into the pros, good talent into the pros.
Well, I think the first thing is, and I'm not a big recruiting guy. You and I have discussed
before.
Sure. I don't believe in the stars. I don't. But when you recruit 4- and 5-star guys almost exclusively, that puts you in a different club. When you're Ohio State and Alabama, when you are Oklahoma, when you're Florida State, when you're Florida to a lesser extent, Michigan certainly goes in there. Penn State has done it the last couple of years as well. When you're recruiting nothing but 4- and 5-star guys and the occasional 3-star guy, you're going to have more players drafted, even if you don't develop talent all that well because they are just that good athletically. Now, Urban Meyer is also a phenomenal coach. I mean, his winning percentage speaks for it. But I think what Urban does, maybe as well as anybody, if not better than anybody, is he hires the right assistants. I mean, when Larry Johnson came available from Penn State, he took him in a heartbeat, didn't think twice, didn't think about what it was going to do to the rest of the staff, just knew he was a great coach and a great recruiter. And Urban understands where this business is and, more importantly, where this business is heading. You can say the same thing about Nick Saban. Whether you like or dislike the way that he does things, he knows the business. He knows the business is all about getting kids in the door. And once you get them in the door, if you do the right things, they're going to go out the door, typically in the first round of the draft.
You had a number of Michigan guys get drafted 11 overall.
Yep.
And Michigan kind of back to where they're used to being, and that's ranked and relevant and competing for a title with Harbaugh. That said, Hoke did a phenomenal job of recruiting because those are all of his kids. Hoke's obviously no longer here. Why do you think he was able to recruit but not win?
Well, I don't think he was a great game day coach. And there is a lot of difference between a good coordinator and a good position coach, which Brady Hoke was for a lot of years, and being a top-level head coach at a premier program. Now, Brady Hoke won a lot of games at Ball State, did some great stuff. But the fact of the matter is that's Ball State. And you can say the same thing out in San Diego. That's not Michigan. It's not the Big Ten. So there are some guys who are just not cut out to be head coaches at this level. Tracy Clays was a really good defensive coordinator. I don't think he was going to be a very good head coach, especially at the top level. And sometimes it just boils down to that. Ron Zook at Illinois was an amazing recruiter. He's a very good position coach, special teams coach in the NFL now. He didn't really have it as a game day head coach, and that's why the number of elite Power Five coaches who stay on for a long time, have Hall of Fame careers, and win multiple national championships is very small. I mean, that's why that list is dominated by all the names that you and I know.
Nick Saban's contract extension, $11.125 million. Yes. What do you think of that number? Excessive or right on?
You know what? I almost think, as ridiculous as this sounds, I'm not sure he can be overpaid. I mean, they're in the national championship hunt, if not in the national championship game, every single year. The amount of revenue that it brings in, the fact that you sell out the stadium for every spring game, I mean, the amount of you know what, Chris? As ridiculous as it sounds, I don't think that you can say that he's overpaid. No matter how much you pay him, it does open up another discussion. If we can afford to pay coaches $11 million, why aren't we paying the kids a penny? Mm-hmm. But that's kind of a different conversation.
Well, $4 million signing bonus. I can't forget that signing bonus. Signing bonuses are going to be out there for some of the free agent signees in the Big Ten, Rick. Austin Carr, Northwestern stud to New England. I'm not going to ask you to predict if he'll make the team or not, but does he not seem like the perfect Belichick guy?
Oh, of course. I mean, he is Wes Welker, Julian Edelman, whatever you want to say. I mean, he's their slot prototype. I mean, he catches the ball, runs really crisp routes, doesn't blow you away with speed, but is remarkably intelligent. Sure, I mean, if he could have picked any one of the 32 teams to end up signing a free agent contract with, it's the New England Patriots, and there's no question about it.
Are you surprised Carr or Corey Clement or even Bola didn't get picked?
No, I mean, not Carr. I mean, his size is just the measurables. It's very Jordan Westerkamp-esque. I mean, a guy who, you know, had a great college career, terrific hands, wonderful football player. The measurables just weren't there. I mean, I think the Clement thing is more injury-prone. I mean, he battled injuries for so many times throughout his Wisconsin career and maybe didn't tough out enough, I think, probably in the NFL opinion. And with Bull, I think there were some character questions. You know, I mean, there have been some issues. So I think all three of those players had enough question marks, and it doesn't surprise me that they weren't drafted.
Nebraska guys that are free agents. Westerkamp is trying a tryout in Tampa. You have Alonzo Moore also down in Kansas City. Seathan Carter in Cincinnati. Brandon Riley in Buffalo. That's a good receiving core for Nebraska the last several years. Banderas in Denver. I've listed a bunch of guys you've seen. You've been to Memorial Stadium to check out. Of the free agent acquisitions, who do you feel good about for Nebraska? Maybe getting a practice squad shot or even sticking with the team, Will Compton or Jeremiah Searle style?
You know what I really think is interesting is where Tommy Armstrong ends up.
I left him off because of the position.
With the Vikings, right? Yeah. Because they just declined the fifth-year option on Teddy Bridgewater, a guy who's dealt with a ton of injuries, but they obviously liked that style of quarterback when they drafted Teddy and when they made him the starter. So if you're going to decline that fifth-year option next year and he's not going to be your guy, then doesn't Armstrong kind of fit into that type of quarterback, that style of play that maybe you liked. I mean, maybe that's what Zimmer wants. I'm not exactly sure, but I think that the fact that they declined that on Bridgewater maybe tells you something about what they think of Tommy. There's a couple of really, really tough goes here. I mean, Ethan Carter goes to Cincinnati. Now, Tyler Eifert is a terrific tight end. He's also very injury prone. So does Carter become a guy who Cincinnati has to maybe rely on because he has all those tools, can block better than Eifert? He's not as good a pass catcher, but he's still a very solid pass catcher as well. So that may be a decent situation. The Westerkamp spot, I can't think of a worse place for him to end up. Tampa just signed DeSean Jackson. They already have Mike Evans. They draft O.J. Howard. They don't need anybody else to throw the ball to. I mean, I understand you got to go where somebody offers you a spot, but he's a guy that I would be shocked if he's able to make the 53. Man, I will add this. Nate Gary being drafted fifth round, I think he's a lock to make the opening day 53. The Eagles were basically done with Michael Kendricks. I think they look at Gary as that kind of hybrid linebacker safety. I think he fits their defense perfectly. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a starter by week one, week two.
He is so versatile, and he started his career at Nebraska as a linebacker. He's been good in coverage, more zone than man, but he still has the ability, and he is, his straight line speed's pretty good. All the guys I mentioned, with the exception of Westerkamp, have all been pretty injury-prone at Nebraska. Mm-hmm. The guy we're talking to next, Alonzo Moore, high-profile kid out of Louisiana, had ankle issues, but when he was right, he was a difference maker. Kansas City doesn't have a ton of weapons. I mean, they've got Kelce. Their system's great, but who knows? Who knows? Maybe he's a guy with his 4.4 speed that finds a spot. Rick, what do you think?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to go with. I mean, anytime you have that speed, you're going to have an advantage over guys that you're competing against, because I think that's 4.4 live speed. I mean, I don't think that's a timed issue for Alonzo. I mean, I think he is that much of a burner. And if you show hands in camp, that's what you have to do. You know your straight line speed is there. What you have to do when you're one of those guys, and you're a guy who, and I think Alonzo knows this, he's on the outside looking in, going into rookie minicamp. You basically can't drop a ball. I mean, that's what it boils down to. You know, I spent 7 years covering the Panthers down in Carolina with rookie minicamp, and every time a rookie wide receiver would come in, if they were a guy that was on the outside, an undrafted free agent, a late pick trying to, you know, get into what was then a pretty full Panthers roster with guys like Steve Smith and Mohsin Mohamed and Ricky Prohl, they literally would drop a pass and go to the sideline knowing that that could have been the pass that just got them cut. And I think that's the attitude that Moore has to take going in there. You catch everything that is anywhere within the general framework of your body, and you give yourself a chance to make the team.
You said the magic word. I'm a huge Ricky Prohl guy. Loved watching him wherever he was at. Any good Prohl stories?
Oh, man, Ricky was a really good guy. So he actually lived in Greensboro when he was in Carolina. So he and I actually worked out at the same gym. Super good guy. His sister, Deborah Prohl, was actually a news anchor at the competing station to the local CBS station that I worked at in Greensboro. So I knew Ricky really well. A super guy. As good of a football player as he was, an even better guy. And one of those guys that you'd see him working out in the gym, and he's really strong, but he's not a massively physically imposing guy. He's the guy who walks down the street, have no idea he was an NFL football player, and man, what a career he had. If you remember the cover of The Greatest Show on Turf, they called them, when the Rams had all those guys, Kurt Warner, Isaac Bruce, Holt, they were going to take the picture without Ricky Prohl in it because he didn't fit what Sports Illustrated wanted. Those receivers and Warner got together and said, we're not giving you this picture unless he's in it with us, and that was the final cover from that Sports Illustrated mag.
Well, he had the go-ahead catch in that Super Bowl.
Yes,
comeback.
He did.
And I think Wistrom and Ricky and John Hess, former Nebraska guy, was with the Rams for a time and knew Ricky. So some good Ricky stories. I had to ask you about him because, man, people smile when they talk about him. That's pretty cool. Rick Pizzo with his Big Ten Buffet at BTN. Rick Pizzo. Find him and follow him on Twitter. You watch him on BTN. Pizzo, we'll catch up soon, my man. Thanks for taking time and great work this week.
As always, Chris, my pleasure, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to hailvarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
to it. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. One of my favorites while he was in Nebraska. Now he has a chance with the Kansas City Chiefs. Alonzo Moore, wide out with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Zo, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing real good. Just blessed to be here.
Well, congrats on the opportunity with Kansas City, but I got to ask you, how was the flight? We talked briefly yesterday. You were on your way to Big D. Did they give you extra peanuts on the flight?
Nah, they didn't, man. They ain't too much high on some of the food I wanted, so I kind of starved myself until I landed.
Okay, so you starved yourself. What'd you eat when you get off the plane?
Man, I had ate like 3 pounds of crawfish.
That is awesome. That is so good. Now, my man, I need you to tell me about crawfish. We'll get into football in a second, but I do crab legs, and I'll do some lobster occasionally, but I've not done crawfish. Am I missing out?
I don't know, man. I feel like if you didn't eat all that, you know, I mean, I feel like, you know what I'm saying, you kind of missing out, but, you know, you more of getting things out of the ocean, you know what I'm saying? Crawfish, they come out the mud, you know what I mean? So I don't know how you feel about eating no muddy stuff, but if you want that mud taste, you know, it's almost like, you know, you got to be really from Louisiana to really, you know, it's like a second thing to us, you know what I mean?
Sure, sure. Well, how do you prepare them then? I got to hear how Zoe does his crawfish.
Oh, I mean, you bought them, but I just like mine extremely spicy. You know what I mean? I like them extremely spicy, but, you know, I mean, they just boiled crawfish. You know, it's just that Louisiana sauce that really give them that flavor.
All right. So how do you spice them up? What are the ingredients?
Oh, you just throw some Louisiana spice in there. That's all you do. You just boil them, and you pour the Louisiana spice and let them marinate up in the boiling water, and you got crawfish.
Well, I'll have to try them sometime. There's a couple places around here that used to do them. I'll have to go investigate. Alonzo Moore with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Alonzo, how'd you spend your weekend? And take me through the phone call you got from Kansas City.
Oh, man, I was, you know, I was sitting at the house, man, and I was sitting there, and I was looking at the draft, and it got close, like, to the end, and, you know, I was, you know, I had my phone on alert, you know, a couple teams calling here and there, and then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, it said Kansas City, Kansas pop up on my phone. And so, you know, I answered the phone. You know, the first thing they said was, is this Alonzo Moore? I was like, yes, sir. He was like, I want you to be a part of, you know, Kansas City Chiefs family. Welcome to the kingdom. And, you know, it was like a moment to me where I was speechless. You know, I really didn't know what to say. You know, it was like a dream come true. Like growing up in the city that I did, the situations and all that, and, you know, it was like a dream come true. It's like every kid's dream, and it's like, you know, I'm one of those kids that's able to, you know, live out their dreams. So, you know, I was very thankful for the opportunity. I probably cried. You know, I went to my vehicle and got on the phone with my dad and all that. I cried for about 10 minutes straight.
Tears of joy, but overcome with emotion.
Oh, yes, sir.
You were talking to your dad. What'd you say to each other?
We were just telling each other, you know, like, you know, I mean, he was just telling me how proud he was of me, you know, all the stuff I done came through, the way that, you know, I was able to stay focused and dedicated through all the stuff that I've been through and, you know, always having faith and, you know, just pretty much, you know, the God thing, like the dad talked to the son, you know.
Mm-hmm. Alonzo, if folks aren't ultra familiar with the obstacles in your way, kind of refresh, I mean, how difficult was it for you to get from where you're from in Louisiana, not only to Nebraska, but now to get a pro opportunity?
Oh, man, it's tough, you know, because where I'm from, you know, it ain't too much of hope. You know, you pretty much, you know, it's tough. You know, it's an environment to where, you know, not a lot of positive things come out. And, you know, the biggest thing for me is that, you know, I'm glad I got the opportunity to give, you know, not only the young kids, but even the older people, you know, the elderly, you know, give them hope that, you know, it's still a chance. Like, anybody can do it. Like, if you put your mind to it, you can do it. You know, it ain't no such thing as you can't or nothing like that. It's like, when would you decide you're going to do it? You know, so I was just blessed to give my opportunity. I mean, blessed to give my city the opportunity to show that, you know, hey, it can be positive out of it. You know, you gotta want it.
Alonzo, it sounds to me like you take the responsibility and opportunity extremely seriously. Just kind of the role model aspect. Is that true?
Oh yes, sir. You know, growing up, you know, I'm gonna be honest. I never had a role model. You know. I never had a role model, you know, that I can look up to. So it was something that was big, you know. I was always my own role model. I knew that, you know, everything that I was going to do was going to lie in me, you know. It wasn't off of nobody else. Like, you can have this role model that you want to be like, but I knew that I wasn't going to be that person because I'm not in a situation to be that type of person. So when I was young, I used to always tell myself, I'm going to be my own role model. Like, I'm going to do the things how I want it, and I'm going to do it the right way.
Alonzo Moore with us, Hail Varsity Radio, off to Kansas City, at Alonzo Moore 0765. Find and follow him on Twitter. What'd Coach Dub say to you after the phone call with Kansas City, and how helpful's he been for you?
Man, let me tell you something, man. That guy right there, man, you know, in my eyes, besides my son and my dad, you know, I got four heroes, my son, my dad, Dr. Garrison, and Coach Dub, man, because, you know, without those guys in my corner, man, you know, I wouldn't have, you know, a lot of this wouldn't be possible, you know. Also, I like to thank God first and foremost, mm-hmm. but, you know, Coach Dub, he had a huge impact, man. When I got the call on Saturday, you know, I text him right away, and I said, hey, you know, I want to see you right now. And he was like, well, I'm about to eat with my son. And I was like, man, we need to find time. I need to see you in person. I don't want to talk on the phone and tell you how much I appreciate you, none. So Sunday morning, I woke up early and went to the stadium before he took off to California or wherever for recruitment. You know, I sat in his office for about 30 minutes and we just talked, you know. But I wanted to show, you know, my appreciation because without him, you know, I wouldn't have been the player I am today.
Alonzo, let's talk a little bit about what you bring to Kansas City with the opportunity and why you think they looked at you. Nebraska fans have seen it through your career, but NFL's pro ball, what did you do to wow them for this opportunity?
That's a good question. I think what I bring to, you know, to Kansas City that kind of wowed them is that, you know, I can stretch the field. You know, my speed, my size, you know, my blocking, you know, very versatile on special teams, you know, just being athletic, you know. That's what I think I really bring to the table for them.
Health-wise, you doing all right? I know the senior year you got dinged up and you had the ankle. When you did play, you produced and were a difference maker, but are you feeling all right now? How's the health?
Oh, I'm feeling good, man. I'm feeling good. I feel like I can run like a, you know, a 25K right now, you know, no problem.
Good for you. Alonzo Moore, a couple more minutes with us on Hail Varsity Radio. What do you know about the Chiefs? Was it a team that you followed? I know Bando and Riley, they were two Chiefs fans before their new favorite team called them. Did you watch KC much growing up?
Yeah, I never did watch the Chiefs. You know, I got a buddy that's played for the Chiefs. You know, DeAnthony Thomas. You know, we had worked out last summer. And what was crazy is that, you know, we was riding in the car, and you know, he was like, "Man, what are we playing together, man, next year?" And right after the draft, you know, I called him and I was like, "DeAnthony, I'm headed to the Chiefs," and I don't think he believed me. So the next day, we FaceTimed with Dub and, you know, he was just like, "Wow, you for real?" And it's like, you know, a year ago, around the same time, you know, we was talking about playing on the same team, and now we get the opportunity.
That's pretty cool. Alonzo, what do you take with you from Nebraska? What do you remember about your time in Lincoln?
Man, I remember the people, you know, the place, you know, they're probably the best fans in the world, man, in my eyes. You know, I'm not doing this just because I played for them or, you know, anything like that. Was the best fans in the world. You know, I also like to thank the coaching staff. And first and foremost, I like to thank the academic center, you know, Dennis LeBlanc, Miss Andrea, Miss Kim, you know, all those people that, you know, because my main goal coming to college was always to get a degree before, you know, I decided to play NFL ball or anything. And, you know, those people pushed me to my max to where, you know, I walked out of there and graduated before my final year. So, you know, I like to thank them. But, you know, other than that, man, it's the people, the city, and everything. I like to thank them a lot.
Alonzo Moore, well, I'm sure Nebraska fans want to say thank you for a great 4 years in Lincoln and nothing but success in Kansas City. Alonzo, best of luck, man. We'll be keeping in contact with you, following your progress, and hoping for the best with you with the Chiefs, man. It's been a lot of fun to catch up.
All right, thank you so much. Thank you for my time, and God bless.
There he is, wide out with the Chiefs, signed a free agent deal, and he is versatile. Can catch the ball lightning fast. And you saw him how many times in his career down a punt inside the 5 or 10 as a gunner. I mean, best of luck to Alonzo Moore. He's done a ton of interviews with us. I mean, going back to his sophomore year, and just he is such a trip and a treat to talk to. Because, you know, we're supposed to have him on yesterday. And he's like, man, I'm in the plane. They're going to tell me to turn it off. I'm so sorry. And he's such a good dude. And he's so, so humble. And he is very cognizant of just how hard he had to work to get out of tough situations. His little boy is the pride of his life. And he's so proud of being a papa. And you want guys like that to succeed. And you want guys that have been a lot of fun to share their story to do well. And the best to Alonzo Moore, man. He is a lot of talent, but better person. And good for the Chiefs looking at him. And good for him to make an impact and a splash. And I love the story he told about crying for 10 minutes in his car talking to his dad about how he needed to tell Coach Williams in person how much he means to him. And the crawfish. The crawfish story. That is good. $11.125 million plus a $4 million signing bonus. Would you take that? I will tell you why.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HAIL to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at @Schmidt_radio and JMore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, Roll Tide.
He will always be remembered. Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. Roll Tide.
But the purpose of this camp, and I want everybody to listen, is to improve.
I'd love to see some of you do a little bit of research and figure it out.
Nick Saban is the biggest piece of turd to ever hit Miami.
Nick Saban, the absolute tightest wound human ever to coach an NFL team.
You know, I hate to be negative with anybody. But when you people start writing stuff about people that were playing that doesn't give them the proper respect, I mean, that's not fair.
Like grandma and grandpa used to play.
All right, sex had nothing to do with winning.
Okay, thank you. He is still going to be the most unhappy $4 million signing bonus dude in America. Nick Saban, $11.125 million Oof. Per year. 3-year extension. Why? Well, yet.
Because all he does is win.
Well, yet dollar bills, son. Greg Burns, the new AD. So he needs to lock him up because there's a kernel of, well, maybe Nick go to the NFL to finish out his career. It's eluded him. No. 3-year extension, $11.125 million a year, $4 million signing bonus. Hello and goodbye. What's it mean? Well, it means that the SEC is going to be like, oh, my God, we got 4 more years of this cat. And the other thing I have, too, and I just found this out, he owns a couple Mercedes-Benz dealerships because they're manufactured down there in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
So does he go in there and usually the general manager or the sales manager, you know, can ream the car salesman? But do they just have like a oil painting of Nick in the center of the office with the threat that they're going to call Daddy Nick if sales projections aren't being met to come in there and raise some hell with the sales staff? Imagine that. That's worse than being fired. Get locked in a room, a conference room with Saban. When we're selling the silver, we're selling the white, we're selling the black. No one's buying maroon Mercedes anymore, Nick. He doesn't care.
There's no arguments. Okay. Those are called ass chewing.
Yes, they are. Don't tell me why it can't happen. Tell me why it will happen. So, Nick Saban, listen. As a college football fan, do you choke at that number, 11.125? And if it could guarantee you 7 conference championships and 5 national championships, would you spend it? Without doubt? Or is there some sort of ceiling you have as a football fan? Because, I mean, Saban's coordinators are at 1 million. He's lost quality and talented assistants. Tosh, whatever the hell his name is, the defensive guy now, I mean, he's at 950. Saban's had incredible staffs put together. He pays talented coaches to put up with him. They get hazard pay. Kiffin made a ton of money, but some guys just, it is hard to work for him because he's always cranky and on edge.
Oh, yeah.
Because he still remembers getting his butt kicked at Michigan State, getting fired in Cleveland, not working out in Miami, and that is what he remembers. Not the success, but the failures. He remembers 55-10 in his own stadium by Osborne and McBride. He's incredible, and he's never resting. And I appreciate how he demands you adhere to the herd and either listen and get a lot of work ethic and perfect yourself, or you are gone. I don't care how good you are. He's kind of like Gino Auriemma, and they can replace amazing NFL skill set with NFL skill set. But he gets them there.
Do you think he actually finishes this contract, though? 8 more years, 2025?
Yeah,
it's a long ways down.
Because he is going to – what's he going to do when he's not coaching? When he's not miserable, how's he going to live?
Well, he's got that lake house
all he
really
enjoys. But no, he's
the got Mercedes-Benz.
No, apparently. I know, but he's the guy. Think about it, TJ. He's the guy who's not in his element unless he's unhappy or grinding. That's all he knows, and that's what he grew up with. I mean, his daddy was a gas station owner in West Virginia, and he was pumping gas. I mean, it was just a grind. That's how he was raised, and that's why he's so successful. But I mean, the guy doesn't get it unless he's miserable. And right now, he's still probably watching cut-ups of the Clemson game, losing his mind.
Yeah, or maybe like when he is done coaching, he can just be moved up and just be like a senior advisor and still love to watch that film and break it down. But maybe the person who's head coach wouldn't want that either.
I think in quiet moments, the joy he gets, man, is being a teacher. But
yeah.
Don't kid yourself. It's about 3 statues to Bears 1. That's what it's about. And the fact that he went to 2 football powerhouses and resurrected them, I mean, it's about the reckoning as much as wanting to connect and teach. Because I think Saban's probably down to his core. He cares about the kids long term. Now, he doesn't give a damn while you're there. He's going to use you, and he's going to use you and use you and use you, and you're going to the NFL with stress fractures or 100,000 miles on you. And he's going to coach you hard, and he's going to scream at you, and he's going to be petty and irritated and fired up all the time, and he's going to scream at other superiors around him. He's going to throw a fit like he's in the toy aisle and he's 2 years old. That's what he'll do. But in the quiet moments, he'll sit back and grin. And he probably sat back and grinned for a little bit. I mean, he's the guy winning the national championship and screaming about the fact the conference championship games and the national title game are screwing his recruiting up. He isn't resting. He is the one guy, it seems like, that has never, ever, ever, ever got complacent or comfortable or fat and happy because he remembers his failures. And what he's done has been damn impressive. And to get that, I have no problem with the amount he's making. I just wonder if it makes you choke as a fan that it's hit that number. Because I'll be straight with you, man. Harbaugh's really good, and he better put up here soon with his $9 million or life insurance or whatever it's worked out to be. But to go 10-3 and get $9 million a year, I think you're hosing Michigan. You better be on the verge of a Big Ten championship. And they almost beat Ohio State last year, I know. And it's been quick turnaround. But year three, for $9 million, you better be delivering Rose Bowls or national championships at Michigan.
Yep, or college football playoff appearances.
Yeah, I mean, and they're not far off. But Saban, man, he's going to be a guy with $100 million in the bank, and he'll still be pissed till the day he dies.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
Maybe a Jay Moore sighting tomorrow. We're waiting to hear word back. Maybe Thursday. Loaded tomorrow. As it's Mike Shewhart. We'll talk to Shuey, Wilderness Ridge Golf. And then the most recent San Francisco 49er Hall of Famer, Pride of Grand Island, Super Bowl champ Tom Rathman, going to be with us. Excited about that. Working on a couple of other things. Enjoyed Mitch Sherman today. Really, really talented and glad he is still working and crushing it with ESPN. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet. We talked NFL draft. Pizzo was on site. He got to hear from him, his take on some of the Nebraska talent questions that we spent a ton of time on yesterday. But it's really just, it just varies year to year, and you'll see more Nebraska guys going in future years because Riley, that's what he does. He develops guys for college and beyond. And Alonzo Moore, man, you could just hear the joy in his voice with the opportunity in front of him. He is so excited. He is so talented. And we never truly got a glimpse of Zoe for a full season because of injury. I mean, he had the shoulder issues. He had the ankle issues. He was so big against Michigan State in that great win 2 years ago. And he is so fast. He's athletic, pretty much a game changer for that road win against Northwestern this last year where they hit him up top as time expired in the first half to give Nebraska momentum going into halftime. And he can do it all. I mean, you saw him on the end around, the way he started the season, cranking out 100-yard receiving games. I mean, he is very, very talented, and he is versatile. And I hope he makes Kansas City at least practice squad, but I could see him staying healthy and then showing up, doing well. Great, great interview. It was all Alonzo that we had at 5:25 tonight. If you missed that, you can go to the podcast, HailVarsity.com, or iTunes, or can check out the ESPN 1480 app.
So I'm a big seafood guy, but I don't think I've ever had crawfish.
See, there used to be a place in Lincoln that had crawfish. I've always wanted to try it. Because I think...
Yeah, or I've wanted to try oysters, too.
Yeah, I've wanted... Yeah.
Scallops.
Yeah. Scallops, like, I've tried that, and it didn't do much for me, but it wasn't awful. But as far as oysters and just straight-up seafood, there's some joint in Omaha, I guess, that I need to go to with Uncle Nate, because he's the seafood dude. But I've never had crawfish. There's a place in town that used to have them, and I guess... Because can't you put them in jambalaya?
Yeah.
Right? But I've never really had jambalaya either.
Yeah,
and so you know how serious Zoe is about Louisiana.
Oh, yeah.
That's pride and joy. He loves being from Louisiana. I just haven't had much Southern cuisine like that, let alone Louisiana specialty cuisine. But like we'll have to do that.
Like, yeah, like a legit Louisiana seafood cuisine cookout like that. I've always wanted to try
that. Give me jambalaya. Give me some crawfish. Just go to New Orleans sometime, I guess.
Yeah.
That's what you should do. Let's just take the show down there. Right?
Yeah.
But no, if you want...
Or maybe Joe's Crab Shack.
That's what I was talking... Yeah. No, that's what I mean.
Okay.
I don't know that they have crawfish.
Yeah.
But if you want to do oysters and stuff like that, you could try it.
Yeah, I love lobster, shrimp, crab.
And I could see Zoe just like kind of looking at me like, you hoity-toity goofball. No, that's all I have. Crab legs and lobster, that's all I've tried. Tomorrow, Tom Rathman. Don't miss him. Thanks, TJ and Schmitty. Talk to you at 4 tomorrow. Thanks.